The Beltway Blitz is coming your way in moments on Grant and Danny, covering the Caps, the NFL, and the Nationals. We are live at City Tap House Penn Quarter, just a few blocks away from Capital One Arena, where tonight the Caps and the Canes inaugurate round two. Game one of this second round series between two teams, Danny. To say they don't like each other is an understatement. Go back and watch a game where there were over 100 penalty minutes in one period about 1 month ago. They hate each other's guts. And going into a playoff series with that animus and that venom already.
You usually grow to hate the other team, right? As the agitators agitate and face washes happen. And just after the whistle, that little bit of business turns into a lot. And next thing you know, you don't like each other. You come in with that level of animus.
To be honest, I think this is an area where the NHL doesn't get enough credit. Because even though it's fairly unfair to the teams that like a Washington's playing a Carolina in round two rather than reseeding and going 1-8, and then you play as the number one seed, make it as easy as possible that the next worst team available, they do it almost regionally and by division. It creates these rivalry series where you play Carolina four times, you hate them. It's why the Penguins or the Flyers, as an example, regionally here in the Mid-Atlantic, like are always playing the Caps in the playoffs. They do it on purpose. They want you to play the teams in your division. And I actually think it's awesome because of the bad blood and the energy and the issues between the two teams. So we will discuss that with Stephen Wino of the Associated Press in moments on the Blitz. We're brought to you today by the law firm Condori and Murad.
What are you doing to protect your family's assets? As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condor and Murad can help you draft your last will and testament, set up a living trust, or put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
All right, let's go to Steve Wino of the AP and talk hockey on the Blitz. Swino, break it down for us. Canes, Caps, what do you think?
Yeah, GP, it's an evenly matched series to me. This is the Capitals and Canes playing two games late in the season. It got really heated, but these are two really good teams. They play very similar sort of defensive checking styles. Hurricanes are an entirely different sort of way they try to score. Capitals a little more selective in terms of not being a shot volume team, but it's a second round series between two really good teams that we've been waiting forever to start.
What's the most important thing for Washington to come out not only with a win tonight, but to win this series?
I think it's Spencer Carberry said it the other day, secondary scoring, special teams, and goaltending. And Carolina was the only team in the first round not to allow a power play goal. Capitals penalty kill struggled in the first round against Montreal at times. They got really good goaltending. They got depth of scoring all over the place, and they're going to need that. And I think it's a little bit of just trying to survive a lot of Carolina's forecheck and sort of pressure that the Canadians put on them, because the Hurricanes are a better team than the Canadians, and the Capitals know it. And sort of the difficulty levels ratcheting it up, and the Capitals need to ratchet basically their play up everywhere around on the ice.
Goaltending situation. Frederik Andersen's healthy. He's playing. What kind of problems does he present?
He's a very solid veteran goaltender, and he's not like someone like Igor Shesterkin last year where he's going to steal games or steal a series, but him being healthy certainly is better for the Hurricanes than Peter Kachetkov, the backup, playing. And he's a guy who is used to seeing used to not facing a whole ton of shots because the Hurricanes outshoot basically everybody they play. What the Capitals are going to need to do is try to, just like every other good goaltender in the NHL, set up screens, figure out how to score goals from different places on the ice, which is something, to be fair, they've been doing well all season.
So, for me, I'm worried about a lot with this Carolina Hurricanes team. They're really good. We've been trying to figure this out. Grant and I have with guests and esteemed hockey minds like yourself. I want you to weigh on it. Why is Carolina such a prohibitive favorite over Washington by all the odds makers?
You know what? I think it's a lot of it. It's the same reason as we all talked later in the year about why the Capitals weren't a Stanley Cup favorite. But I think a lot of people look at the Capitals and say they've overplayed what it looks like. Like, they're not as good as their record. And I think there's something to be said for Carolina might be a little bit better than their record. To me, it's a coin flip series. I think this should be slightly more like we're a slight favorite, like the Edmonton Oilers are against Vegas, where it's like a -115 and a -105. I think it's a series that goes one bounce here, one bounce there. But clearly, you look at what Carolina did in the first round on the power play, almost 32%, and the elite talent and the sort of playoff experience that group has had in recent years, and I guess people give them the edge. To me, I think that's a little bit overrating Carolina versus and underrating what the Capitals have done this season.
Steve Wino of the Associated Press. You're familiar with the three stars that the NHL likes to do after a game? I know you're new to the sport. You're familiar with that, Swino?
Of course.
Yeah, that was a joke. I was kidding. But Swino, based on that, I want the three players I'm most likely to despise on the Hurricanes at the end of this series. Go.
I think there's going to be different reasons for why you're going to despise them too. And I think Jackson Blake is going to be one of those players because he's such a fun player to watch and a rookie, the son of Jason Blake, longtime NHL player. But he's a guy who easily could light up an opponent. I'm going to go with Jalen Chatfield, who's the one who tossed Connor McMichael on his head at the end of that fight, at the end of the regular season. So I think there's already a built-up hatred between that. And then I'm going to go Jordan Martinook is another one because he's an annoying sort of player who can get under opponent's skin, but also score that big shorthanded goal where all of a sudden the Capitals on a 4-minute power play and he goes the other way and the game changes. He's that kind of guy.
So I asked Trevor Van Riemsdyk, the former Hurricane, which player on Carolina will hate the most at the end of the series, and he said Jordan Martinook.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy where you love to have him on your team, and a little bit sort of like a Nick Dowd player where he can go the other way while he's killing penalties, but a little bit more experience in that department than Nick Dowd.
How will Protas be deployed this series? He got his feet wet, got back in. The lineup was mainly on that fourth line and then a little bit on special teams in this previous series. Now with this like month and a half off that they just had, how do we think we're going to see Protas fully functional, hopefully?
Yeah, Danny, it's fascinating because Protas is going to start on the fourth line and with Brendan Duhaime and Nick Dowd. And it'll be a question of when Spencer Carberry and the coaching staff feel like he's ready to move up and get more ice time, because there was a certain rust factor coming off that skate cut to the left foot and the absence and all that that I think they really wanted to ease him in. Now that he's got another full week off, I don't know if he's rested and able to sort of jump in and play more minutes, but I have to see him moving up the lineup more. But really, against Carolina's power play that's been so good, the most important thing for Alexi Protas is to be on that penalty kill and being playing those minutes and blocking shots, clearing the puck out of the zone. That's going to be his most important role. But also, if you move him up the lineup with some more skilled line mates, this is a guy who scored 30 goals in the regular season and wasn't on the power play very often. So a guy who I think you could really and who is one of their, maybe not their best 5-on-5 scorer.
Swino, thank you, buddy. Good catching up.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
That conversation and all of our Caps playoff coverage today brought to you by Astrom Carpentry. For over 25 years, Astrom's been a trusted trade partner for new home builders in the DMV, specializing in full-service interior trim carpentry, handling everything from supply to installation, turnkey and hassle-free. Contact astrom.com today. Astrom, the home builder's trade partner. Let's keep the Blitz moving. And to talk football with us, we got our buddy Mike Jones of The Athletic. Mike, where are we at with Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers? Have they backed themselves into a corner where if he ends up flaking, they're just screwed, or do they have a backup plan?
Well, I mean, for right now, Mason Rudolph would be the guy for them, you know, and that's not the greatest situation to be in. I guess it's possible that they could still call the Atlanta Falcons and try to get Kirk Cousins for something, but paying a quarterback that much money is not something that they normally do. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. In the past, they've never been bad enough to get a quality quarterback. Would this be the year that they go ahead and just struggle and limp along at quarterback to see position themselves for a better option next year? I don't know, but as longer as this Rodgers thing drags on, you know, some people thought it was going to happen, you know, after the draft when he saw whether they drafted a first round or second round quarterback. But then other people have told me that maybe if he does do it, it might be a little after OTAs, because we know that last year, a couple of years, he goes on these retreats during the off season. So it's, you know, a lot of watching and waiting all across the league, wanting to know what this guy's going to do.
I was going to try to get my zing off. I still will, just for the purposes of getting the zing. What happens first, the draft here in Washington, D.C., or Aaron Rodgers signs for this season? But you answered that question. So let me move on to the Ravens and Justin Tucker. It sounded like they were going to be patient, Jonesy, until they weren't.
Yeah, we don't know yet what they found out, but it must be pretty clear to them that, okay, we've got to move on here. They have been an organization that, look, when the Ray Rice stuff happened, as soon as John Harbaugh heard about it, before they even saw the video, he was ready to move on. And they waited, you know, they were more patient because of up above. They were like, hang on, let's be a little more, you know, cautious here. But Harbaugh himself was like, hey, you got any problems, we're moving on. So they finally, when we saw them draft a kicker, we knew that the time for Justin Tucker was going to be up pretty soon. And here they've made the decision to release him just this week.
Speaking of quarterbacks, Shedeur Sanders was in the news yesterday because I guess he's been doled out number 12 on the roster. Number 2 is currently in use. But that's a weird situation for a lot of reasons, both the veterans that they have. Then they drafted Dillon Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders. What's their depth chart going to look like? Are all those guys going to be on the team?
Well, there's no way that they can carry, you know, 4 quarterbacks and 5 if you count Deshaun Watson, but he's going to be on IR to start the year and maybe all of the year. So I'm looking at this saying, okay, they're probably going to keep Joe Flacco. The guy that's probably going to be the odd man out would be Kenny Pickett because, you know, Joe Flacco is accomplished. He has taken that team to the playoffs just a couple years ago. They have Gabriel. They have Sanders. Sanders, I think that he definitely got the message loud and clear that, look, this is the NFL. The entitlement stuff has got to be out the window, and he's going to have to come in there and work. So we'll see how he and Gabriel compete. Obviously, Gabriel had limitations, you know, but he did get rid of the ball more quickly and things like that. He's not as physically gifted. So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, we saw, it seems like a couple years ago, but a while ago we had RG3 and Kirk Cousins, and it wasn't the guy that physically gifted that wound up having the more, you know, accomplished career. So we'll see how things play out there in Cleveland for their 2 rookie quarterbacks.
Mike, I want to give you a chance to weigh in on this because you were here for a long time covering this organization in Washington, D.C. The fact that Draft Stadium, like I'm hating, the President of the United States is openly referencing how awesome the quarterback is here. You know what I mean? All the goodwill, the first double-digit win or 11-plus win season since, you know, I was a kid in Little League. Like, all these things have happened in the last couple of years. Can you believe where we are just in terms of how far we've come as a Washington franchise?
Dude, karma's real, man. You know, you have a bad person who treated people poorly, you know, at the top of the organization, and it trickled down. They got rid of that curse that was Dan Snyder, and Josh Harris treats people right. He knows how to put the right people in position, and things are turning around, and people want to do business with this franchise. It's shocking to me how quickly things have turned around, but it's pretty awesome to see.
It all comes back. That's why I named my daughter Karma. Not me, but Chris Bridges. Hey, Mikey, thank you. We appreciate you, buddy.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
See you, dude.
Reagan and McKinley are my daughters.
And Karma.
Karma is Ludacris's daughter.
Oh, is it really?
Oh, yeah. That's Chris Bridges. That's what I was just – remember I just said Chris Bridges?
I didn't know.
That's Ludacris.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Is that Ludacris?
Are you saying Chris?
Is there a T there?
Ludacris?
Ludacris. Ludacris. Let's go to Nationals Park across D.C. Welcome on to the program, our guy Toby Altizer, who is on the scene with about 96 other people right now, numbers approximate, as the Nats are playing matinee baseball, a rainout last night. They are taking on the Cleveland Guardians. Toby, give us the latest.
Yeah, it's a pretty sparse crowd here at Nationals Park. Jake Irvin hasn't been as sharp as he walked. The bases loaded in the first inning, was able to only give up one run after he threw a wild pitch. Gave up a homer in the second inning. The Nationals were able to answer with a run in the bottom half of the first, but looked not great in the bottom of the second. Right now, top of the third, 2-1, Guardians.
What's going on with Dylan Cruz?
I wish I knew, Danny. It seemed like for a little bit that he had figured things out, but now he's back to struggling a little bit, and I think it's just the ups and downs of a rookie season. It seemed like he was swinging the bat okay, but maybe not recognizing stuff early in the season, and then he was able to finally start getting things going, but now he seems to be back in the struggle. I think it's just finding a way to have some consistency there. I'm not sure you'd know better about mechanically if something has changed, but I think, you know, it's just for him about going through the rigors of a season. I think this is going to be the ups and downs of a rookie season for a guy who, you know, he never really dominated the minor leagues. He kind of went through this at every level where he'd struggle early on, and then he'd kind of figure things out and kind of level out. So I think it's just some early struggles for a rookie that probably should be expected.
Nathaniel Lowe's already got 28 runs batted in for the Nationals in game 36. He's been outstanding for them in that capacity, had the RBI in the first inning. What do you make of his season so far, hitting 260, about a 790 OPS.
Yeah, I mean, you've been have to be thrilled with what you've gotten from him so far. He's been a great run producer for this team, something they needed out of that first base spot, which has been a real problem over the last couple of years where they haven't got that production. And he's an interesting first baseman profile where he generally isn't going to hit for a lot of power. He showed a little bit of that earlier this season, but I don't think he's going to hit, you know, 25, 30 homers. He's probably going to sit somewhere in that 18 to 20 range. But you got to be happy with his ability to come up in big spots and come through. This is a guy that's won a World Series, so there's not going to be a moment that's too big for him. So you have to be happy with what you've gotten at a low so far.
When Mike Soroka comes back, what's going to happen to the rotation? What are we going to see?
Yeah, I would think that Brad Lord goes back to the pen. I think that's ultimately the plan there, and we'll see what, you know, role he fits in as, whether it's a couple innings in the middle innings or whatnot. But I think Soroka is going to be a nice boost because you just look at this rotation right now, and Jake Irvin doesn't look like he's his sharpest right now. You have Mitchell Parker, who's kind of going through a rough patch as well. And Gore's been good, but Trevor Williams is only giving you five innings every time out, and they're trying to give him the sixth inning sometimes, but that hasn't always worked out the best. So I think if they could get another reliable starter in Soroka, if he can come back and pitch well, I think that'd be a really big boost. But I think the immediate answer is they'll probably just move Brad Lord back to the bullpen, which I think will help out the pen as well.
Jake Irvin just hung a zero for the first time today in the top of the third. They're headed to the bottom of the third at Nats Park. It's 2-1 Cleveland over Washington. Set the table here, rest of this game, some storylines, and then also into the evening, who's on the bump for the Nats. I know it's a doubleheader where you could get in for the price of one and see a couple games, which is rare.
Yeah, I'm hoping some more people trickle in at the regularly scheduled 6:30, 6:45 game tonight. I think you'll see a little more people here, but Brad Lord going to be on the hill for the Nationals tonight. Ben Lively for the Guardians. I think the big thing to watch for the rest of this one is Jake Irvin, already over 50 pitches through three innings, the first of a doubleheader. You're going to need him to get through some innings here. So he's going to have to figure out a way to hang some more zeros, get through at least six innings and see if he can do that. And the offense has to show up. They're facing some guys with some, you know, the Luis Ortiz coming in had an over four ERA. Get some runs on the board and see if you can win the first one. And then you're taking on a little stiffer competition in Lively, who has a 3.72 ERA coming in when Brad Lord has struggled a little bit at times as a starter. So I think you got to try to get game one here and see if you can maybe win both of them if you give yourself a chance for that.
Toblerone, thank you, sir.
Always great to talk, guys.
That's our guy, Toby Altizer. You know him from the Boston Loose Baseball Nationals podcast. That's an award-winning podcast. They've won many awards.
Which awards?
So many.
Go through them.
First
just
year.
Name a couple.
It was a new podcast of the year by, I think it was Radio Inc., something like that.
Wow.
I could be wrong, but I got to look that up.
Yeah, double check
then,
that.
Then this past year, they won Best Podcast on the Washington Nationals as an Odyssey podcast. Mm-hmm. That was from Rolling Stone.
The Stone.
Like something like that.
Yep.
And then, well, there was one more. Do you remember? Oh, it was, I know what it was. Best podcast on the Nationals in a season in which there's not as much interest as you'd like as a podcast host.
Yeah.
They won that award from the fandc.com.
They got that one?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Who are the other nominees? Anybody else?
Yeah. I think Locked On, the Clary podcast.
The once a week Nationals one.
Yeah.
With Dan Coco and Ryan Zimmerman.
Yeah. 11th inning.
11th.
I actually saw Zim in the elevator last night, and I told him, and I'll tell him right now if he's out there. They are killing it with their guests. They got this week they had Backstrom and Oshie, who are like two of his best buddies.
I know, it's cool.
All their kids are in school together all the time. But yeah, good stories, good fun. But anyway, Boston Loose Baseball
won the award for podcast most likely to mention Jacob Young.
Yes.
Won that award.
I think
right?
so.
Yeah.
Best detailed breakdowns on Harley and Susana. Two-time winner of that award, two
the
straight
two
years.
Time, yeah. They won it twice.
So good.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
So wherever you get your audio,
awesome.
Boston Loose Baseball. Awesome. All right, let's pay this off. We told you we'd give away tickets to the D.C. Defenders. We got a four-pack for you all week long in this Blitz segment. So right now, caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. You're winning tickets. The Defenders are hosting Arlington on Sunday, May 18th, coming up in a couple weekends. Tickets on sale now. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com. Nobody gives away more tickets than we do.
We're ticket giveaway guys.
We're giving away another pair of tickets to go see the Caps and the Canes game 2 Thursday night at Cap One Arena. That is about 30 minutes from right now. But next, the Commanders in Washington, D.C. going to host the NFL draft in 2027. Our buddy Steve Zabin does radio in Green Bay where they just hosted the 2025 draft. What exactly are we in for? We're going to talk to Zabe next on The Fan. taking the trip on Amtrak down to D.C. here recently a couple of times. Of course, the big press conference about a potential stadium at the RFK site, and more recently yesterday at the White House with Josh Harris and Muriel Bowser in the Oval Office. They're talking about the NFL draft coming to the nation's capital in 2027, and I was trying to think about who would have good perspective on just what that feels like, and realized that our buddy Steve Zabin, who I grew up listening to back at a time pre-106.7, the fan only 980 for sports in this town, I would pull a little radio out in my backyard while I was shooting hoops and acting like Mitch Richmond, and I would listen to Steve Zabin and Andy Poley do their radio. So Zabe is with us right now. We're fired up to welcome him onto the show. He, of course, is breaking down all things Green Bay Packers and Wisconsin sports on 97.3 The Game. What's up, Zabe? How you been, buddy?
Good, Grant. Would you stop doing that? Makes me feel terribly old because I consider you and Danny Pierce. And so
that's all I can think of.
We don't need to bring all that up, but I appreciate the sentiment. I appreciate this.
Yeah, I was a little kid. He's still listening to this old guy talk about sports.
He's still got his A game. Yeah. Nobody's saying, Zabe, that it's no longer still worth tuning into my guy. But that was it, man. Sports talk radio for me with Steve Zabin.
Oh, Mitch Richmond days. Wow. So was your jumper wet back in the day?
It was a little bit
Mitch
silly.
Mitch Richmond imitated.
So here's how we played in my backyard. We didn't put a lot of money into my court, I'm going to say.
Okay.
My dad put up this little basketball hoop with, like, it was not glass. The backboard was, like, made on almost of, like,
plastic.
Thick. Yeah, not even plastic. Kind of. It was
fiberboard?
Like, yeah, essentially. And then we would wear out the court just by running around to the point where a three-pointer was the grass behind where the dirt would stop. Because there hasn't been as
so
much
you
wear
had,
there.
So you had a dirt court. You had a dirt and grass backyard court, correct?
Homemade dirt court just based on playing on the grass.
He was Ricky Rowe from Blue Chips, basically.
But on the right wing, you could get like a 7-foot shot from the rim that counted as three because you were on grass.
Yep.
And I would just wear it out from right there.
Right. That's what my boyhood friend Jonathan Siegel had. And I considered it extreme poverty having grown up in the 22102 zip code. Right. And I would tell people, look, the mean streets of McLean are real. My buddy, Jonathan Siegel, his mom, single mom, put up a backboard in the backyard and he had to wear out a patch of dirt so you could actually dribble anywhere.
Exactly.
And then
right.
When it rained, when it rained, the court was closed for at least 3 days.
People don't know, Zabe. People don't know what it was like.
I didn't know Grant, though, grew up in such poverty as well. Look at what you've made of yourself.
I was in the locker room one time. It's a great story with on the Redskins beat, and Trent Williams like called me over to his locker. And he's like, did you have an island in your kitchen? And I was like, no. He's like, oh, okay. He's like, did you have a refrigerator in your garage? And I was like, we did, actually. He's like, you grew up rich.
You're rich.
I was were the things.
I never thought of island kitchen as a litmus test, but it probably checks out.
He probably checks out.
Fridge and garage checks out as well. Yeah.
Right. The extra fridge where you put the thing that you can't fit into your current fridge. But yeah, it was hard out here. I remember when I got old enough to start cutting the grass, I took a weed whacker and just went right to the court. And tried to extrapolate out a
little
bit.
Take it right down
space.
To the nubs.
Try to fix it. Yeah.
How was your draft experience? We're trying to figure out what we're going to get ourselves into here in a couple of years. We're fired up. But what was it like for you guys?
Well, congratulations. I'll say this. The draft as it has become by the NFL is one of the most gloriously stupid things I think I've ever witnessed. Now, look, they came out in droves in Green Bay for it. They supported it. They came from all over the state. And it's a civic pride thing. And I was there for it, and I was taking it all in. But, man, you couldn't see anything. You couldn't see anything. You couldn't hear anything. It was just a mass of humanity, but everyone was seemingly having a good time. Now, you got to understand, Wisconsin, the basic thinking is, oh, hey, you're going to go to that thing? Oh, yeah, at Lambeau? Uh-huh. Does it cost money? No. Oh, okay. Is there beer? Oh, there'll be beer. Oh, okay. I'll see you there. And so it's April, so it's really not spring there yet. So there's nothing else to do per se. So they came out in droves, and plus Packer fans are just lunatics. So they wanted to come out and show that, hey, we can support our team and our little humble city of 109,635 or whatever the number is. I actually was talking with a friend about it. I wonder what it would be like if DC were to have it. And literally before I could turn around, I was like, yeah, they got the draft in 2 years. So I'm like, okay, cool. And then they showed the rendering of, you know, the stage on the mall, and it looks awesome. It's going to pop on TV. I have no doubt there's going to be a ton of people that go. But if you go, just be prepared. You won't see anything. You won't hear anything. But you will be amongst your football people.
So, Zabe, my question, I have a bunch of questions, but my first one is, like, with being local and being part of it, right? I know, obviously, you're based out of Green Bay, but I still consider it fairly local radio enough, right? Were there perks? Like, was the NFL helping you guys? Or was it one of those, like, you could talk to our associate director of product placement and products about, like, the latest activations? Like, what was it like for you guys?
No, there was very little media perks from the NFL itself. In fact, one of the kerfuffles was they didn't open the credential tent until till like 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Thursday. So about 5 hours after before the draft started, there was media members waiting. Do I still have you guys or not?
So yeah, we got you.
Yeah, you're still here.
Okay, good. All right, cool. Yeah. So there was, media was waiting. I thought there was going to be a nice sort of media area, maybe a standing room only area somewhere underneath the so-called theater, the giant tent with all the lights and the video boards. Live Nation contracts with this company called A3, and they're the ones that make all these huge stages, so they know how to do it. I thought there'd be like a media ledge or balcony or something where we could get close enough to kind of see the stage and whatnot, but no. They're like, you're on your own. Now, you can buy VIP packages as a fan to be underneath the theater tent and up close where the tables are, but they're like $3,500 a pop, which to me is insane. And they tend to front load a lot of the super fans that dress up in cosplay outfits with their favorite teams because it looks better on TV.
Mm-hmm. Those are my favorites, actually.
I don't hate them. I do not hate them. You know, everyone's going to have a hobby and a passion of mine.
Read a list of names over 4 hours with long breaks in between. You want to dress up, you dress up, brother.
Well, I always thought, now this is getting a little bit deep here. I always thought those were fake. I thought they were characters, like you're hiring this person and he'll put on the creator outfit. Until about 5 years ago. Yeah, but I realized, like, these guys, we know them. Yep. They've done events with us and Rally This and Commander That, and they're just dudes. The thing about the Chiefs guy that's in prison right now, those Robin Banks.
Chiefs Hall.
Like, they're just dudes that on Wednesday they're Carl at the office, and then they paint their face and put on a cape.
They're David Putty on the weekend.
They're at the stadium, dude.
Yeah. Well, there's a ripe picking for new Commander superfans because the logo and the name is so fresh and unique. There's not a lot of guys who've been doing it for years. Like at Lambeau with the Packers, there's a number of guys who have been doing whatever. Like there's one guy who dresses up as the quote frozen tundra, and he's got icicles that are hanging off his giant headset, his headdress and everything else. There's a guy who's kind of a dead ringer for Vince Lombardi, and he wears a camel overcoat and a similar hat, and he walks around and does really bad impressions. So there's a lot of character acts that have been built up through the years of the Packers. Is there, do you know, similar for the Commanders at this point?
Oh, yeah. They've got a couple of guys that like host fan events that either just based on an outfit that they have or based on putting on the Block W.
What's their character, though?
Rally Captain is one.
Okay.
I'm the wrong guy to ask. I really don't keep up with it.
I'm not my strong suit. I like football. I'm weird.
And Danny would be the wronger guy to ask.
Precisely.
Right. Yes. Yes, that's very true. Hey, while we've got you, I am curious about this. So the stadium, RFK 2.0. I mean, you were ride or die with this club for so many years, and it's a different club now, obviously. From afar, what are your thoughts on just the operation and the state of the union here with the name Commanders, kind of the reboot with the look, and now the possibility of going back to RFK with this new thing and a new 2.0 version of that stadium?
Right. Well, from the radio afar point of it, because I do still live in the market and listen to you guys on a more than infrequent basis and listen to all the regular hosts and shows in and around town and read all the stuff, I have been keeping a close eye on it. And when they announced it, I was like, wow, that's fantastic. To me, it's the best deal in the best spot. I've always said this with Andy for years. I go, look, the new place where whatever it looks like has to be where RFK is. It's like the line from the Big Lebowski, the rug ties the room together. That stadium has to tie our sprawling tri-district megalopolis of the DMV together by having a stadium right there. And the fact that they got the rights to that land at the last minute, a true 12th hour miracle, was one amazing thing. And then the fact that they got what looks like a very workable deal for what I think is a very sharp looking indoor stadium, more on that in a second, is also tremendous. There's such momentum with Harris. He's on a roll like you haven't seen before on every level. But then I'm like, it's the DC government. And boy, can they jackknife a one-car parade. And I heard your interview with the mayor the other day, and you guys asked good questions, and the mayor was doing all she could to try to say, look, you know, here's what it'll do, blah, 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 blah. And I agree with her. You know, you can't just say, well, we could do the equivalent of a Costco and a Best Buy and this and that. The stadium will bring in the other businesses and will make it a place to go to 20, 25, 30 times a year. Because you're talking about with an indoor stadium, you can do all kinds of stuff, as you know. Everything from Super Bowls to political conventions to truck pulls to you name it, right? So it's in the right place. The deal is good. Harris and his guys are going to pay for two-thirds of it, give or take. And this thing should be done right now because momentum is real and it doesn't necessarily come back together. So I'm a little bit nervous because I just know that there is opposition and it seems pretty strong right now. But I think it's the right stadium in the right place, and I don't hate it. I do look at it and say, wow, the Windex budget better be profuse because there's a lot of glass. And other than that, you know, and I know people are like, we want an outdoor field. We want real grass. Well, do you want to spend $1 billion on a tray that can slide out so you can grow real grass? Like, what is that going to do? You're basically paying $1 billion extra dollars just to have, you know, worms in the dirt. Who cares? Indoors. Like, I've been to Minnesota. Have you guys been to Minnesota?
The best.
It's sublime. And theirs is only kind of half translucent with the way their roof is.
Yep.
But it's wonderful. And, you know, the notion of the romantic notion of Hogs weather and NFC East football, it's the modern day and age. You might as well be indoors. Plus, a lot of these retractable roof stadiums like Indy and Houston and Dallas even, they almost never open the roof, you know.
We were talking about this. We were at the World Series in Houston, the Astros ballpark. And they kept it closed. It was beautiful there.
Yeah, it was literally 70 degrees with no wind movement of any kind, no inclement weather. It was like perfect. And they were like, we should probably keep this dome closed.
Well, they want it louder. Yeah. You know, they want the atmosphere. They want people to be comfortable. It is. It's you have the retractable roof and you barely use it. Steve Zabin is with us getting a lowdown on getting to host an NFL draft. 97.3, the game was just all over the draft coverage with Zabe out in Green Bay. Before I let you go here, we got about a minute left, but is the name growing on you at all? Like, what are your thoughts on the name now compared to day one? And has it changed at all?
The name is just sort of settling down. It's like a bruise. It's like a wound that'll never fully scar over. I'm a name truther. I'm a guy that just, I feel like the team died because that, you know, the Redskins and that logo were my team of my youth and my adolescence and my adulthood. So I don't think it's ever going to be good, but I think it's kind of settling in. And I think with every year that goes by, a chance to change it grows slimmer and slimmer. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. And especially now after Josh Harris in his way said, yeah, the name, it means something now. There's a brand to it. And I kind of threw up my mouth a little bit, but that's the point. I mean, it wore me down with Wizards. That's the dumbest thing in the world. I hate that name, but I ran out of fight. I stopped fighting after whatever it was, 15 years or so.
Well, Zabe, there was a point in the playoff run last year. I looked at Danny and I said, "You're having fun. I'm having fun, right?" And like, yeah.
Okay. That's great.
Also, the name's never going away. I mean, with the highlights, the big moments,
The other problem is there's not, I think, a slam dunk would be universally liked new landing spot that you could jump to, okay, we're going to be this name now. Whatever new name after Commanders is also going to have a very split allegiance to it or likability to it. So now you got this unbelievable trail of debris with the name and logo behind you. from whatever the new team name would be to Commanders with the taco holder to the football team with the bear helmets. And then, you know, the Redskins before that. So I think it's probably going to have to settle in. But look, nobody cares as long as five is upright and healthy.
Yeah, nobody they're winning games, care. As we saw. All of a sudden, the name was not as big of a deal for a stretch last season. All right, Zabe, we'll be hitting you up as we get closer for the do's and don'ts as we prepare for the
and
draft.
And by the way, I'm not saying don't go. You should absolutely go. I said, look, I'll go because our station's the flagship of the Packers and we're broadcasting from there. I wouldn't go to any other draft in any other city, but because it's ours in the backyard of the team, of course I'm going to go and see it. And I think everyone should probably do it for one of the days that it's on the mall, especially if the weather is nice. But again, you can't see anything. You can't hear anything. Yeah. I was standing there. You know, they put the players up on the Jumbotron who have been picked, which is great. And you can see it from, say, 200 yards away, which is where I was. But then they throw on the house lights, the big Klieg Stadium lights, to light up the crowd. And that obscures your ability to see. Wait, is that the tackle from Texas? I can't see it.
You couldn't see the wide receiver for the first time in 50 years that Green Bay drafted.
That's the one. Right. That's the one. I mean, that really made it for the Packer fans that it was the ultimate pop of finally taking a wide receiver in the way that Mark Murphy, great Redskin, delivered it on his way out the door as the team president was perfect stuff. So I think it'll be a home run. I think you should go check it out. Just come prepared, wear comfortable shoes, and let's hope the weather is nice.
All right, Zabe, we'll do it again soon, man. Good catching up.
Good to catch up, brother.
All right, boys. Take care.
Be good. That's Steve Zabin. We're Grant and Danny. We're live at City Tap House. We got another pair of Caps tickets for game two against the Hurricanes Thursday night. We're going to give those away at the end of the hour. You are listening to The Fan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Bruce Boudreau is going to be joining us in about 10 minutes. We're going to talk to the longtime former head coach, very popular in town, of the Washington Capitals, get his thoughts as we get ready for the Caps and the Canes going into game one tonight of the second round. Nationals, by the way, playing at home against the Cleveland Guardians. They've got a 4-2 lead, thanks largely to a two-run home run from James Wood, who's already got 10 bolts on the season. DC, we got ourselves a superstar.
That is a bona fide on his way to stardom star. It's happening.
They've had more than just about anybody else. Now, they haven't been able to keep him, but when you think about Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg and Max Scherzer and Juan Soto, and even for a short time there, Anthony Rendon, and now James Wood, who's on his way to 30-plus home runs maybe in his first full big league season. If he can stay healthy, he could flirt with 40 home runs at the pace he's on.
It's just silly.
It's been astounding. Today's home run, by the way, 115 miles an hour off the bat. It was a laser low line drive into the bullpen in right field.
Just, it was dumb, quite frankly. I mean, it looked like somebody with a cannon for an arm trying to throw the ball on a line, like the projectile that it had, you know, or the angle that it had coming up, and it's probably a line out for most people, not for the super phenom.
I mentioned to John Walton when he was on the show that the Carolina Hurricanes are creeping up on the Penguins as far as rivalries go. I don't have a rival here. Do you think Carolina can catch Pittsburgh, or no, is the Crosby Ovechkin backstory in 20-year history too much? I mean, if we got into a situation where Carolina is better than Pittsburgh the next 3 years, that's probably a lock. Washington and Carolina are vying for the division. And now you start playing every year in the playoffs. I think there's absolutely a path to that because they've got a good head start. Now, the teams have only played once all time in the playoffs, and there's already hatred. Imagine You have a second series this year. Maybe the next 2 years you meet in the playoffs. You're the best two teams in the East potentially over the next couple of years or close to it. Why can't they overtake the Penguins as the most hated team for Washington?
Is there a DeLorean with a flux capacitor involved? Is there a time machine that undoes Lemieux and Yager and Francis and Tom Barrasso and the rest? No, the history. There's too much Penguin history. There's too
there's
much.
A lot, isn't there a lot of young Caps fans that don't care that much about that?
Maybe, and that's fine. They're allowed to think what they want. Too much sadness. Too much unbearable anger and hatred for yous and yins standing on the steps of the portrait gallery. Never. There is. Carolina's got 50 years of making my life as a sports fan miserable to start approaching this. Now, I hate them. I hate them good. I'm good at it. I got plenty of hate to give. I hate in my heart. It's a big, wide open storage facility for hatred. Plenty. I hate Brendan Moore. I hated him when he played for Philadelphia. I hated him when he played for Carolina. I hate him now that he coaches Carolina. I hate Warren Fogle wherever he is. I hope you get athlete's foot today.
He's in the Western Conference.
Good. I hope he stays there and has like a weird misunderstanding that like leads to conflict. Nobody gets like parking tickets and stuff the rest of his life. Screw him. But I hate the Hurricanes. Nothing can compare to those loathsome Penguins as far as I'm concerned. Nothing.
It must just be that they've been so irrelevant the last few years and out of sight and out of mind and not a playoff team over the last three campaigns. But with a side dish of Crosby and Ovechkin seeming to come together at the end of their careers here with mutual respect, and there's a little bit less animus between the two. But my hatred for them, which has always been a 10, is just a good casual like 8.5, 9 right now. Whereas the Hurricanes, despising that I'm pretty good at, has generally been sitting neutral. Carolina's just kind of irrelevant for a long time. And when Washington first played them in the 19 playoffs, they were the little engine that could. You sunned them a little bit. You tapped them on the head and said, oh, that's cute. We'll see you in a few years. Now, Danny, I fast forward. One of the better teams in the sport. Eastern Conference final appearance a couple years ago. Bad blood again this season. They're creeping up. I'm not saying they've caught the Penguins. I'm saying I think there's a path 3 years from now to thinking that maybe, just maybe, they could. We could ask Bruce Boudreau about this. He's going to be joining us in moments here on G&D. Right now, though, another chance to give away Caps tickets to caller number 9 at 800-636-1067. You're winning 2 to game 2 on Thursday night, May 8th, against the Canes. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com. Live from City Tap House, this is the pregame spot. Come on and kick it with us. I had a puck drop on Grant and Danny.